Who better to solve England's most puzzling mystery than these two international crime busters?
Yes?
Today, I'm Inspector Winship, and this is my assistant, Dr. Tart.
With the law and the order.
Gathering vital clues from every available source.
Well.
Step by step, Tim Conway and Don Knotts prove murder can be deadly in the private eyes.
Hello and welcome to Throwback Reviews Podcast, Episode 1. My name's Sean, and with me to help cut the ribbon is my friend and co-host, Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Door-to-Door Geek.
How are you doing, man?
Doing real good, man. Been waiting to do this for a while. It's been in the works. We've talked about it, and here we go with Episode 1. How are you doing?
Doing really good, but let's all be honest. This has been in the works for 32 years now.
Yeah, because I've held on to these movies. Pretty sure... The way I picture them in my mind from as being a kid is probably going to be totally different when I watch them. I think I remember things completely differently. I have these ideas of how things were, and then I will rewatch them and go, wow, it's totally not what I thought or not what I remember. So it's going to be a fun show where we can do that, just an excuse to rewatch these movies and, you know, talk about them as, air quotes, adults, and see how what we think of them now.
In big, fluffy air quotes, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll say there were things we're going to realize that we didn't pick up on because we were younger in these movies. And then there's going to be things that when we were kids we thought were hysterical, and it just doesn't hold up over the years. But we are going to definitely talk about some gems here.
And I will say this film, as an example, we'll get to it, but there's definitely one scene that completely stuck in my mind for all these years, and it lived up to what I remember it as. So with that being said, this week we're gonna do The Private Eyes, the 1980 film with Don Knotts, Tim Conway, and it was directed by Lang Elliott. He did a couple other movies I never even heard of. I don't know. Cage and Cage 2, they had Lou Ferrigno in them. And they were basically cage fighting movies, I guess, before the UFC was even thought of.
That's what it definitely sounds like. The one movie that rings a bell, a big, hard, loud bell with me, was Dorf on Golf, which was a Tim Conway creation where he was basically a guy. He had no legs, like where his knees were was where his feet were, and he played golf.
Yes, I remember those. And when he would fall over, it looked so odd because he his knees were where his shoes were in, you know, that was his knees. So when he fell, it was just so not right.
Yeah,
and it was funny. So, but yeah, this movie. A brief description before we get into it. I was trying to think, I'm like, you know, the best way I could describe this to somebody is that it's, I would say, a mixture of Scooby-Doo meets the movie Clue. I mean, that's the best way I could describe it. I know on IMDb and Wikipedia, that, you know, it's like a Sherlock Holmes spoof. And I guess you could say that, but I constantly just thinking, man, this is totally Scooby-Doo meets Clue, the movie. And Tim Conway, I know he was on Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Don Knotts was.
Oh, I can guarantee you Don Knotts was. I will put money on that one.
I'm sure he was.
Because Don Knotts was everywhere. And I will say, the picture on IMDb for Don Knotts, maybe the best looking Don Knotts picture I've ever seen in my life. He looks, dare I say, virile, not really old, and almost handsome.
Yeah. Tim Conway, not so much, but
yeah.
But we all get like that at some point. So, but pretty much this movie, there's a murder. There's a murder at the Morley Mansion, and these two detectives from the U.S. are sent over to England, basically to solve the Morley murders. And they're sent there. and again, to reference Wikipedia, they say they're not really sure why. I think it's because, to be honest, they're kind of idiots. I mean, you know, they, in the beginning of the film, they even say, Don Knotts says, you know, because of the timer gun.
Right.
Tim Conway's character, Dr. Tard, is kind of like the inventor of odd things. And he has a gun that goes off on a timer, and he shot their, you know, their chief in the foot. So they sent him over to, Scotland Yard.
Yeah.
And they got put on this case.
Yeah. Very early. They basically show you a newspaper article, proclaiming these guys are idiots. So very early on, they let you know very clearly, these are not the best of the best. These are kind of the, fumbling buffoons. And to me, that was another part of it that made it Scooby-Doo-esque, was that these guys invented stuff. Like, you know, on the Scooby-Doo, they always invented traps kind of thing. So that's one way that I made that mental link.
Right. Yeah. Cause yeah, he has, you know, he invents this gun and he's got pigeons in his coat.
Yeah.
When he needs to send a message, he just pulls out a messenger pigeon, which doesn't, you know, it doesn't always work out so well. And he's got what, like a 3 foot, a pistol with like a 3 foot barrel
yes,
in his leg, stuffed in his leg. So, which comes in handy, as we find out later in the film. These guys, it is a good film. And basically the main characters are Tim Conway as Dr. Tart and Don Knotts as Inspector Winship and Tricia Noble as Mistress Phyllis Morley. So those are the main characters. As far as our thoughts as a kid, honestly, Dore, you didn't really remember seeing it until you actually watched it.
Yeah, there was like maybe one or two scenes as I was watching it that caused like sparks, like, oh, yeah. But when you first told me about this and I looked at the poster, I thought to myself, where did he find this movie?
Yeah, and honestly, I just found it tucked in the back of my head, back of my head somewhere, because I kind of forgot about it. And then I just was thinking about it. You know, I've been on a real retro kick lately. And so it came to my mind, and I remembered certain parts, like Wookalar. That was one thing that always stuck out in my head, was the Wookalar. I remember my mother doing the, you know, sucked his brains right out of his head, like that part. And I thought one of the other parts was when Justin the butler tells him to walk this way and they kind of imitate him.
Yes.
But I think if I remember correctly, I believe there's a scene like that in Young Frankenstein as well.
Yes,
and that's probably what I was thinking of it. But yeah, the Wookalar.
As soon as he said walk this way, I immediately remembered Marty Feldman saying it in Young Frankenstein, and I almost felt proud when they both started to walk like the other guy. I was like, yes, score.
And that will be in the roster of films, Young Frankenstein, another great movie. So, excuse me. So why don't we'll start on basically covering the movie. We talked about this before the show. We're not going to go step by step, but, there are a number of murders, we'll say, in this movie. So we'll kind of go through that and then recap at the end. So, basically to start the movie, it starts off at the Morley Mansion, and it shows, and what really stuck out to me was, you know, Lord Morley gets, you know, he comes out with Lady Morley and they get in their car. And, let me stop and ask you, what time period?
Dude,
I could not put it together, because certain things were like, okay, it looks like this time period, mm-hmm. but then this time period. And it's just like this big montage of.
I know. I mean, you basically blew my mind, because that was the same thing I kept asking myself the entire movie, was what time frame is this supposed to be? And they never clearly say when it is. Maybe if you look closely at the newspaper or something, it does. But the only giveaway I had was when they went to a gas station and they showed that gas pump. That gas pump told me it had to be pre-1930s, and because a telephone wasn't widely used, you know, I'm really unsure about that time frame, but I had to think it was like early, between 1900 and 1915, I would say, if I had to guess. But I was, the whole time I kept thinking, maybe it's around this time frame? I don't know.
Yeah, it threw me. And it's funny that you say the newspaper, which, you know, we'll get to that scene. But I actually went into VLC and paused and took screen caps because I thought, let me go look at that newspaper. You know, there's got to be a date on there, and I didn't see anything. So, but yeah, so anyways, it starts off, and Lord and Lady Morley, they're going to a dinner party or something. They get into their car, and it's funny because Lady Morley's just giving him, you can tell that Lord Morley is not your typical, stereotypical, like, rich, snoot, I guess you could say. He is very, he's not proper.
Right.
And she doesn't like that. You can tell he kind of gets on her, I think, because at one point he references, he forgot his smokes. But, and then he has to correct himself, cigars. And then he says it again. So he goes in the house, and I think he calls her Buttercup or something.
Yeah.
And you can tell she's annoyed. So he's in the house, and that's when victim number one, is had by, the person in black, or I believe it's called the Shadow.
Yeah, the Shadow.
Is it the Shadow?
Comes out of nowhere in the car, puts a rope around her neck, and pulls. And then the scene cuts. And then they flash back to the whole car where he's coming out of the mansion.
With his smokes, I mean cigars.
Exactly. He goes to get in the car and he drops them. And the whole time he's talking to her in a very proper voice. That was one of the things. Their voices, I just loved. It reminded me of like Thurston Howe the Third off of Gilligan's Island. And he was just talking to her. And then he finally, like 30 seconds after he gets in the car, he looks over at her and realizes she's dead.
Yeah, he tells her no sleeping or something.
right.
And then that's when the handkerchief goes around his neck. Or no. Sorry, that's when he gets clubbed.
By a lead pole, I believe it was, or iron pole. Which those two things also made me think Clue. Like, that's why when you said Clue, I was like, strangled here, pole there. What's next? The candlestick.
Right. And, he gets knocked out unconscious, and the shadow or the person in black basically starts the car, starts driving it, jumps off, and the car goes into, the lagoon. Hence, there's the death of, Lord and Lady Morley. Then we get into these two bumbling guys, they're put on this case. They're put on to solve the Morley murder. And, you get a real taste for their character. In the beginning, when they're at this gas station.
Well, yeah, but first I'll say, here's the one big difference that told me the time frame of the movie. Right after the murders, they cut to what had to be at least a 3 to 5 minute cartoon intro. And I miss these kind of real intros where now it seems like every movie, they have to bring you the movie right now and then show you words over top of the stuff while people are talking. No. This was the kind of movie that took the time to show you a proper introduction. And during the introduction, you kept seeing this shadow with bombs and stuff. And this was the real cementing of, look, here's examples. These guys are idiots.
And I'm glad you brought that up. Why do I have notes here, Dor? I don't know, because that was in my notes and I skipped right over it.
That's okay.
That was number two, because it reminded me of the Pink Panther movies.
Yes.
You know, you had this long musical intro, cartoon, and like you said, just, you know, bombs going off and this going off. And, you know, so I really did like that. That's very cool. I mean, I think it was like 2.5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes of an intro.
It was definitely every bit of 2-3 minutes, I'll say. And I liked how they kept almost, I don't know, like Scooby-Doo-ish like style, where the flashlight came up and you saw the director's name and then the flashlight went over. To me, that is authentic Hollywood right there.
Yeah, it was very good. I'm really glad you brought that up, because it was really nice to see that. Like I said, all I could think of was like the Pink Panther. And after that, then you see them driving in. They're kind of conversing about why they're there. And like I had said before about the timer gun, they kind of tell that story. They pull up to this gas station. And the attendant recognizes them as being, I think he even says, like, you're the two idiots or something.
Exactly.
On the case. And he wants to get them to sign his newspaper because they'll make his place famous, which they will.
Exactly.
And not that manner. But I also want to point out, a character from that. I looked up the attendant and I didn't find out too much, but the silent attendant, did you recognize who that is?
I honestly believe I've seen him in almost countless movies, especially, Westerns, old Westerns, but I can't tell you. I know I was watching a movie not too long ago where he didn't say much. He said like two or three words, just like in this movie, but he had that same like look on his face.
And I mean, I've probably seen him in countless movies also, and he kind of seems to just be typecast as this just old guy, which he has to, you know, he obviously was a lot younger, but this is from 1980, but he's always looked the same.
Yeah.
But the movie that I knew that most people probably could relate to him being in was, Old School. He was Blue.
You know, oh my Lord. I forgot about
you're my boy. Yeah, yes. You're my boy, Blue. That's him. So if you guys remember Old School, the movie Old School with, I forget what his actor was, one of the twin brothers. Yeah, that was Blue, the old timer guy. He's pumping the gas, doesn't say a word in this scene either. But this scene that we're talking about kind of sets, along with the intro, kind of sets the, you know, to show how these guys are, you know, so they're going to sign this paper. They have a cigar. And basically when they pull away, Don Knotts at one point had a cigar on top of the car to sign the autograph to make this place famous. So people know, pull away, cigar falls.
Yeah.
Of course, there's gasoline on the ground and boom, they're driving away. And all Tim Conway can say is, I got to get that muffler checked.
Yeah. as soon as he put the cigar down, you knew. My eyes is laser focused. Here we go. Here comes the idiots.
Exactly. So, and you kind of, and just from their interaction with each other, you can tell, like, you know, and I know we talked about this the other night where Tim Conway just was great in this movie as far as just like bumbling and just like his antics were great. And Don Knotts wasn't like Mr. Furley-ish, as people know from, you know, Three's Company. But he played his part, I thought, really well, where he was supposed to be like the straight laced, you know, intelligent one, but he wasn't. He was still a moron. The guy was still, you know, he's still a moron. It's just that Tim Conway's character was more, the word I'm looking for, but he was.
Yeah, there's the, straight guy in the comic relief, and that was a very gray line that they both teetered over. And I'll say, okay, Old Blue, Patrick Cranshaw, this guy has been in everything, okay? Just a real quick recap. Back in the 80s, okay, and 90s, Married with Children, Quantum Leap, Night Court, Hunter, Perfect Strangers, Pee-wee's Big Ed Venture, Different Strokes, Mork and Mindy, Little House on the Prairie, Dukes of Hazzard, on and on and on and on.
I'd be willing to bet that he probably speaks in maybe 10% of all of that.
Exactly.
It seems to be every time I've seen him, he doesn't really say much, but, yeah, so that was kind of funny, and the other thing I noticed on the gas station, you know, it said I forget the name, it said I think oil and tires,
yeah,
and it's spelled T Y R E S, and I told my wife, I thought I was all smart. I said, you know, I picked up on one of the things on there that they kind of miss, you know, they spell it, and I Googled today, and of course that's the way that it's spelled in England. The British spell it T Y R E S instead of T I. R-E-S here in the States. So I thought I was smart. I'm glad I looked at that before I, you know, came on this show and just be like, yo, these guys don't, you know. So that was good. I kind of looked that up. So we take that scene from them driving away, and the attendants just running for their lives. It's this massive explosion to where they get to the Morley Manor. And it's a massive, massive, beautiful place. And the first person they encounter is actually one of my favorite characters, is Justin the butler. And this guy is just a character. he hears the word murder and he flips out, because he, as we find out later in the movie, he was basically accused of murdering his wife and her 13 lovers, but Lord Morley got him off. So we start off that way. And then it comes in the nanny who, all I could think of was just Gestapo.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, from the timeline we're getting, it's probably a little before, but she would have fit in quite well. She's got the very heavy, to me, seemed a very heavy German accent and very, just very stern. And her and Justin have this weird, odd, like kind of S&M type relationship of where he wants to please her and she just wants to hurt him, you know, to keep him in check.
Justin, may I speak to you for a moment in private?
Excuse me, gentlemen. Do me a favor, will you? Don't say that word around this guy.
What word?
Murder. You will believe that this guy goes through.
I don't know what. What are you talking about? Oh! Walk this way.
And that's where we get the scene where the nanny wants to talk to Justin privately. And he overhears, I believe it's Don Knotts, say the word murder.
Murder.
And he starts flipping out and she gives him a knee right to the right to the boys. And that's when he starts coming to take him to meet Mistress Phyllis. And he says, walk this way. And as he's all, you know, hunched over as any of us would be, they got it there. And they kind of follow him.
And they both hunch over and walk this way.
So we meet Mistress Phyllis, which, nice, we'll say.
Very.
And they notice that. Eyes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's exactly how they react to her. And, you know, she gives him the sob story of, you know, where she was when she found out the news. And I think that's where we find out she was basically adopted, I believe, mm-hmm. from them. So we kind of get that story. After that part, they go to the rooms to kind of get settled, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And as they're in there, you know, Tim Conway's on the bed and they're kind of going back and forth, him and Dr. Tate, Tim Conway and Inspector Winship, Don Knotts' character, they're kind of going back and forth and there's a big pulley, obvious, next to the bed. Tim Conway pulls on it, boom, all of a sudden this door opens and this mansion is just full of secret passages and, which get utilized throughout this film. And in this case, they go through the passage. They're kind of walking through. And that's when we encounter the shadow for the first time. And it kind of mimics the opening cartoon where he lights an old school, like,
round bowling ball sized bomb.
Right. You know, total Roadrunner type, you know, bowling ball bomb, and he rolls it, and of course they're like, oh, it must be a bowling alley here. Thing blows up, they fall down like a, I believe in a chimney or something.
Yes, it was a chimney. They came right out of the chimney covered in soot and stuff, and everyone acts like, oh, it's about time you showed up.
And there is the entire staff of the Morley Mansion, and this is a scene that I love this scene because there's an obvious part in here. As they're walking, you know, the staff is lined up at attention. Mistress Morley comes in, gets them all at attention, and there's an obvious tension between Phyllis Morley and the staff. It's this obvious tension between them and her. And, so they want to go through and they want to meet everybody on the staff and kind of question them real quick. And, so we kind of go down the line here and they meet the cook and, it's Mr. Awatsum. He's the cook. And he pretty much lets them know, like, I was won by Lady Morley. They kind of get their story of how they became part of the staff at the Morley Mansion, and he tells him that he was one, I want to say, and I didn't write this down, but I think it was like a cribbage game or something.
It was some kind of card game, yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, he basically was there, and he liked Lady Morley pretty much. To get what I gathered, he had a thing for Mama Son.
Yeah,
had a thing for her.
I always like her, just like Mama Son.
I believe next in line is Hilda, who is the voluptuous maid.
Yeah, quite. And here's where I noticed a lapse in editing continuity.
Exactly. And that's exactly why I love this part. Why don't we just go through what happens and then we'll backtrack to that. Mm-hmm. They're asking her and she tells them, I'm Hilda, very bubbly maid, you know, your typical, you know, I believe French maid suit type thing, you know, very, very nice. And they're very mesmerized by her. And, you know, she tells him that, we find out that Lord Morley was very fond of her and I believe gave her, was it a raise or promotion every week, she says. So, and Lord Morley never saw a maid with so much bounce before.
My name's Hilda. I'm the upstairs maid. Lord Morley gave me a promotion every week. He said I was the only maid he'd ever had who was full of bounce.
You know, she's very clueless in her description of everything. So, you know, Tim Conway, Dr. Tate, it was like, well, hey, you know, I could maybe use my place to get clean on Saturdays. Here's a card.
Right.
And she takes the card and puts it in between her girls, and you get the little sound effect. And that's the part that Dora's talking about, is when they first come down that chimney and they go down the staff and they show the staff, she already has that in her.
Exactly.
So there was some major editing flaws here. She's already got the card in between her bosoms.
Yeah.
But then when they go up to her, it's gone.
It's gone. And then it comes back. I know. And I gotta say, the Asian chef, ultra stereotypical Asian chef, because this is 1980 after all. This guy, let me just say something. Once you see him, you know. You've seen this guy in 100 things. That's because he's been in 150 things from 227
That was the old Jack. That was the show with Jack Hay, right?
Yes, it was.
And the maid from the Jeffersons, 227.
You got it. Yep. He's been in that. All kinds of TV shows, all kinds of movies. Really looks like his popularity, let's say, slowed down in the early 90s. But this guy, I mean, Trapper John MD, Airwolf, Highway to Heaven, Stir Crazy, Silver Spoons, a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, and he was in Magnum PI.
Was he in Magnum?
Yes, sir.
I'll have to keep my eye on that on my rewatch. But yes, I definitely noticed, I knew he was very familiar to me.
Yeah.
A few of the staff was, but the other thing about Hilda, I looked up her and I was like, all right, who is, you know, the lady who played Hilda, which is Susie Mandel.
Yeah.
I looked at her IMDb and it's very interesting. She's got some interesting movies, Confessions of a Driving Instructor in 1976 and Come Play With Me in 1976. I think one of them was 74, but I could be wrong, but I believe they were like X-rated movies or something, or a British X would maybe be like an NC-17 or a rated R here, maybe, possibly.
Yeah, that's the impression I got too.
Yeah, so she definitely wasn't anything I saw before. For research purposes, maybe we'll have to, you know, look for those. But
right.
But yeah, I found that interesting because a few of the staff I had recognized. So yeah, they give her the card, and now it's there where it should be. They move on, and I believe they go next to, let me see who it was. It was the groundskeeper, I believe.
Sounds right, yes, sir.
Tibet?
Mm-hmm.
His name was. He's a gypsy, and he kind of tells the story of how he was, you know, become into the Morley.
No.
Oh, was Jacques next? Maybe, right. You're right. You're right. I'm mixing them up. Jacques was next, and he had his tongue cut out.
Ah, yes. Sorry, I had the names wrong.
My name is Jacques. I'm the groom. I was under the Lord Morley's command in India, and there I had my tongue cut in.
So, yeah, that's Jacques. He's the groom, I believe. He takes care of, like, the stables and all the things on the grounds.
Yes.
And they talk to him, and they find out that he had previously was in, I don't know if it was a military or who he was employed for before, and had his tongue cut out from trying to steal ruby from somebody. And they find out that the ruby was actually in her navel.
Yeah, it was in her navel at the time.
Yeah, so he's trying to talk, and like Dor did, you can't understand this guy. And Tim, he's like, Don Knotts, Detective Winship was like, what did he say? And so Dr. Tate tries to tell him what he said by doing the same exact thing.
Exactly.
Stop. I have to stop. I got to stop this podcast. Actually, this is a post edit. Tim Conway is Dr. Tart, not Dr. Tate. But for the remainder of the podcast, I screw up and I call him Dr. Tate. I apologize. And now we return back to our normal program.
I forgot about that. He's like, what did he say?
Yeah, so then Mistress Morley has to basically explain his story. And he's kind of a hunchback, very creepy-looking fellow.
Then dirty.
Yes. And then we move next to the groundskeeper, Tibbet, who's the... was he like... He came across to me like a drunk.
I am Tibbet the caretaker.
Yeah,
he seemed
a drunk, and he had Marty like Feldman eyes. His eyes were like too big for his head.
Yeah, and very dirty, greasy looking. He's the groundskeeper, and he's got a shackle on his foot still, and he's indebted to Lord Morley for helping him out. So we meet him. He was another character. I don't recognize him from anything. So I looked him up, wasn't really sure. And same with Jacques. The character of Jacques, who is Erwin Keyes, I believe. Mm-hmm. I looked up his IMDb, didn't really notice too much, although he just did a film recently. It was basically like a marijuana type, story. It was like the Bong, Evil Bong 3D, The Wrath of the Bong, and it was just
nice.
So he's obviously doing some movies that I'm not really too familiar with. So we meet those two characters, and then we move to the guy who I like is Justin, Justin the butler, who is Bernard Fox, and he reminds me of someone, and I looked it up, and I made this mistake that I'm like, it's Rip Torn.
And no, I said the exact same thing. As soon as I saw him, I said Rip Torn, and then it took me like 30 seconds, and then I said, wait a minute, no, that's not Rip Torn. But he had the same kind of like a facial hair, which I think made me make the connection.
Rip Taylor. Is who he looks like. Rip Taylor, who is known as the King of Confetti. And anybody, people who like grew up in the 80s or, you just see him on game shows a lot. He kind of just appeared everywhere.
Yeah. Rip Torn was the real bitter guy.
But the funny thing is if you go to Rip Taylor's site, it even shows. It shows him and Rip Torn, and it says... Arrow, Rip Torn, Rip Taylor.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, because everybody obviously makes that mistake.
Good, we're not the only ones. I feel good. Good.
Yeah, so it's a common mistake, but he looks like him. He's got, similar to him. That's who I thought of. And
I would say, now there's two things this guy's been in. One of them everybody should know, and one of them you should know. This guy was the drunk in The Mummy. Everybody's seen The Mummy by now. He was the British guy who was from the Royal Air Force or whatever, and he was constantly drunk, just completely drunk. Once you see this movie, it will immediately connect that with him, because I kept thinking, I don't know why, now I know why he's going to be drunk in this movie, right? He's going to be drunk in this movie. And now I know why, because in The Mummy, he was completely snookered the whole time. And of course, he was in... Murder, She Wrote.
I just saw that. I don't remember. I'm obviously haven't gotten that far either. I believe Murder, She Wrote started in 84. I'm still in end of season one on my rewatch. So, but yeah, he's great. And he tells his story. Basically, he, like I said earlier, he was, accused of murdering his wife and her 13 lovers, and Lord Morley pretty much got him off, got him off the charges, yeah. So he was forever indebted to Lord Morley.
Yeah, so, I mean, you basically figured out here, everybody on the staff was well-liked by at least one of the couple, Lord or Lady Morley. Like, they were, like, saving them, protecting them, or giving them raises or promotions, if it was.
Right. And the last person we meet is the nanny, who's played by Grace Zabriskie. She looks really familiar. I don't remember from... I can't pinpoint what I remember her, but she totally looked familiar. And she's the nanny. She's the one who I said I instantly thought, like, she would just fit in the Gestapo. Very, very, you know, cold looking and very heavy, like, and I don't mean to stereotype the German accent, but, you know, just her character.
She had that look. Likes,
yes, brutal force, basically, with Justin.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Dor.
Yeah, I was gonna say, she has the aura about her where, I'll just say like this, she did not need a lot of makeup to pull off the character, even though they obviously had makeup around her eyes and stuff to, like, put that grimacing look onto her. But she's the kind of person where as soon as she showed up, the other staff would straighten up if they were doing something wrong, because she was that intimidating.
Exactly. And there's definitely something between her and Mistress Phillips, because she even says, you know, she's been there since the beginning. Everything basically was great. And then Phillips came around.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so there's obviously something between those two characters. So we meet this. Now we know the staff. So now we're kind of just going to go through basically the staff gets picked off one by one.
Literally.
In a clue-like fashion.
Well,
one
and,
by one.
Well, and every time someone died, there was a note by their body, which also that made me think Scooby-Doo-ish.
So we skip from that scene. They go into their room, and they want to ask him, you know, Mr. Watson. They want to find out, you know, stuff about him, his relationship and everything. And this was what Dor had told me the other day, a very entertaining scene. If you want to talk about that, what you liked about that scene between Watson and Dr. Tate.
Yeah, I'll say Tim Conway, to be honest, I think he's one of the most underused talents back in the day of Hollywood. If for some reason he didn't get enough work, he didn't get enough credit, as far as I'm concerned, he is just genuinely funny. And when you watch him, you can tell there's no extra work involved. There's no extra thought involved. He's just funny. Well, he basically gets in to like almost like a bowing contest with the Asian chef. When they say hello, the Asian guy like does a little bow towards him. Conway does a little bow back. And out of graciousness, the Asian chef gives him another bow. So he gives another bow. And then the Asian chef gives another bow. And then he bows. And then he turns toward Dodd Knotts and gives a bow. And then he literally, like, the entire scene basically won't stop sitting there bowing and bowing and bowing until Dodd Knotts finally says, "Get away. Just get away.
And let's question this guy," because it is nonstop. And you're right. I think it was just a matter of timing back in the 80s when you had people like, you know, Eddie Murphy, and just a different, you know, this. Listen, I'm no prude. Anybody who listens to our other podcast, Android App Addicts, knows I'm not a prude or anything, but there was just a different way that the comedy was handled back then. He's from a different era. I mean, you know, with the Carol Burnett show, I forget what the other show was, but
he was on Mama's Family too sometimes.
And I'm drawing a complete blank on who his counterpart was. Not only Don Knotts in these movies, but Harvey Korman. They did a lot of improvisational kind of comedy together that was just different. It was a different time and a different way of comedy, that I really do appreciate. So Tim Conway is definitely, I wouldn't say like super physical, but he's physical to a degree where everything has an action. So, but yeah, so they meet the cook, and you know, he's basically telling them, like, I didn't kill the Morleys. So they want to kind of take a look. Don Ossoff's character, Detective Winship, wants to take a little look around the pantry. And they go right in the pantry, and, you know, they're not really finding anything other than peaches, which turns into a nice little funny scene of, yeah, of Tim Conway's Dr. Tate is, you know, eating some peaches and trying to talk and obviously making a complete mess. So they go back to the room, and the nanny ends up bringing up some tea, which you see her in a hallway, and she just happens to kind of turn away from the cart with the tea. And all of a sudden, this is when you see like one of those secret little compartments open, and there's the black hand of the shadow putting in some stuff into the tea. They go back into the room. She brings them the tea. And they notice, I believe, Detective Winship tries to stir it, and the spoon basically melts off.
Yeah. Well, he said something to Tate, and Tate says, well, maybe you just got to stir it.
Yeah, and he stirs it in the spoon, which is, I'm sure, is just pure silver, just falls off,
yeah,
just gone. So that, so they're like, okay, we're going to go talk to Mr. Watson and find out, get to the bottom of this. And this is where we find our first murder case, is they end up finding Mr. Watson dead in what I think is like a food elevator where they would use to you know, hoist up the food to a different floor to be delivered.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of the, It's just a very small hole in the wall where you have a little pulley system to move it up and down. A dumb waiter.
Dumb waiter.
All right. And like you can tell, he's like shoved in there, crushed in there kind of thing. Cause where his legs are and his heads are, that's not natural.
Right. Right. And we find that out too, because, and this is when we start finding these notes. And I don't know exactly what this one, I don't have it written down what it exactly says, but the one thing that we find in all these messages when someone's dead, there's either a note or something, mm-hmm, they start to sound good and they're going to rhyme and that just goes
exactly
off, you know. Like something to the degree of like, blah, 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 blah. There's been some murders. There'll be more. We'll be watching you. You know, don't look through the window instead of door, something to that degree where, yes, it just goes off.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like making pace, making rhyme, making pace, boom.
Right.
And I'm like, and I kept thinking, well, that has to be like part of the tip. That's like a tease. It's like a thing telling us what's going on. So I'm sitting there stupidly trying to focus on that, and they both start to panic, and Tim Conway wants to test to make sure he really is dead. So he basically turns to the dead guy, gets close up to his face, and goes, "Bah!" And he's like, well, he's dead, he didn't move.
Yeah, trying to scare him.
Yeah.
So now they're like, all right, we got to go tell Phyllis about this, you know, and Mr. Smorley. And this just happens with all of them. By the time when they get back, there's nobody there. There's no body.
Well, yeah, we do see the dumbwaiter starting to move as they walk away.
Exactly. As soon as they walk away, now it starts going down. And this guy is flexible because of the way he bends in the elevator going down. There's no way I could bend that way. And when they get back, he's gone. There's like chickens there, raw chickens. Yeah. And that's when we're first introduced to the myth of the story of the Wookalar. And, you know, Dr. Tate is convinced yes, that it could, you know, there's a possibility a Wookalar is doing all this, which a Wookalar would be a part human, a part pig, like a mm-hmm human body with a pig face type monster.
And every time he even says the word Wookalar, you can see Don Knotts is like, oh, do not say that in front of other people.
Yeah, he just is like, there's no such thing as Wookalars. Don't talk about it. And they're like, we gotta send a message to the yard. You know, that's when he gets his mail pigeon. Yeah, his carrier pigeon out and puts him down. And the carrier pigeon sees the raw chicken there and basically dies.
Yeah.
You know, dies. You know, so,
yeah, that to me, the carrier pigeon idea was good. We did also have one more carrier pigeon incident before that. Right after they talked to the younger lady, And they find out, oh, she's adopted. She's this. Don Knotts turns to Conway and says, okay, now we should let the yard know that we're here. Conway pulls out a little carrier pigeon out of the inside of his jacket, like it's just sitting there the whole time, comfy, just waiting for him to pull him out. Pulls him out, does something, turns towards a door, throws the bird. The bird goes through a window, smashes through a window, and just falls to the earth.
Yep.
And then he just looks at Don Knotts, looks back at the bird, looks back at Don Knotts, looks back at the bird. And Don Knotts is like, come on!
So that's murder number one that we deal with, and we'll find that all of them kind of have the same little way that they take place afterwards.
Right.
So that happens.
Well, and I can tell you right then and there when that murder happened. Really quick. This is a different decade of movie making. All of this before this first murder was a literal setup. Setup, introduction. Now, once this first murder happens, that's when in the movie, things start to happen. And quite literally, I'd say within 20 minutes, three people dead. Yeah. And every time, as soon as someone dies, the first thing they want to do is they want to run and tell somebody. Both of them just start to like almost panic with their hands up, attitude wise. Oh, there's a dead body, and they always want to go find somebody. And every time someone dies, it's like, dudes, keep one person there. Why not?
Right.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to. That does happen at one point later on in the film.
Trying to remember who was the second person who died, though, because first one was the chef. Second one had to be wasn't the gravedigger.
It was Tibbet. Yeah.
It was? Tibbet,
they go to speak with him. After, because they want to know, because there's not only does Dr. Tate think there could be a Wookalar,
yeah,
but there's also like, could it be Morley's ghost? Because that's the other thing. There was a note we found in his office in the beginning of the film before the first death, basically saying Morley wants them to
exactly.
He wrote this note after he died, but right. how can you do that?
Well, yeah, that's where we found out the guy who wrote the note to the police in the New York to have these two come over and solve the murder was Lord Morley. Buddy Ganny was dead.
Right. Which now brings the fact, is it a Wookalar? Is it somebody else? Or is it Morley's ghost?
Right.
So they are like, all right, well, let's go talk to the groundskeeper. Let's go to talk to Tibbet and see, was Morley actually in the coffin when they put him in the, not the grave, but mausoleum?
Mausoleum, yeah.
Right. So they go to talk to this guy, and here, of course, he's digging his grave. He's 3-4 feet into this grave digging. And they're like, what are you doing? He's, I'm digging for worms.
I'm digging for worms.
he goes,
I always dig for worms.
He goes fishing every night. He goes fishing every night. So he's just digging for worms. As we all have done in the past, I remember being a kid, we used to, have campouts and we'd go dig for worms and we weren't 4 feet in the ground.
Yeah.
But,
exactly.
That's how this guy does it. And, he's basically telling him, but the thing is, Lord Morley wanted to come back from the dead. And his thing was he had Jacques, the groom, make it so it could be unlocked from the inside of the casket.
Exactly.
Or the coffin only. So when he died and he'd come back from the dead, he could get out. So this could be the ghost of Morley. We don't know. But we got to go talk to Jacques because he made this coffin.
Right. Which, of course, I immediately knew is a complete waste of time because they can't understand Jacques. But that was the instance where Mr. Tate now said, hey, what's a ghost? It's a ghost. It's a ghost. Or it's the Wookalar.
So they're not going to go to the barn. They're going to talk to Jacques and find out, what you built this thing, what's going on. And so, of course, they're calling this guy, and as they're walking up, this guy is just heaving on something, like he's just beating something to death. Bloody murder. He's got a hook in his hand, and turns out he's baling some hay. Everyone grunts and groans when they're baling hay like this. So they come in, and they're calling for this guy, and it slides down as a bale of hay, and then slides down Jacques to follow. And he's trying to tell him something. He's yelling at him, They can't understand them because his tongue's cut off. And it right. You know, it turns out they're standing in, what is it, horse caca. It's basically what he says.
A lot of it. A lot of horse caca. A lot of it, too.
You know, so they notice that. And they want to talk to him, and then he just happens to just kind of leave. Jacques leaves, walks around the corner or something, and they're like, what's going on? And then they hear the screaming. They're just screaming. So they run out. They go back to where Tibbet was in the grave, and there it is. He's half buried. You see his like head and arms and his legs sticking out. His torso is completely buried, grave
right.
put in, and there's another. Now there's a gravestone.
Yes, this is not just a note. This is engraved on the on the tombstone itself.
With his name on it. Tibbet, T-I-B-E-T, and a whole other thing. I should have probably had all these notes of what they said, but another same thing. Rhyme, rhyme, rhyme.
Yeah.
No rhyme. Kind of leaves you like, what is that supposed, what's that supposed to mean?
Right. And then as soon as they see it, they both like turn to each other in like fear and panic and disbelief. Oh, we got to go tell somebody. And they both run away. And as soon as they run away, the shadow comes out from the darkness and like pulls the guy by his feet out of this half buried body. I mean, he just grabs the feet and pulls him out.
Yeah, just grabs his feet, kind of slides him out of the dirt like it's nothing. Just waiting in the shadows is the shadow for them to go, and he pulls the body out. So again, we're not going to have a body, but they're like, all right, Jacques is right over there. Let's go get Jacques, and they're calling for Jacques, and all of a sudden. Yeah. Right down from the hay chute again is now as Jacques comes flying down, arms out, on top of
that. Note on his chest.
Note on his chest, and now he's dead. So they panic again, and they go back into to the mansion. And we cut to the scene where everyone's in there, and Justin is basically like, look, I didn't see nothing. There's no bodies out there. And this is when the whole, like, Morley ghost idea kind of really comes about, because a portrait of Lord Morley kind of, when Don Knotts' character is kind of saying, yeah, right, there's no ghost, it kind of, like, turns on its side and goes on level, and he's just like, all right.
And he's like, I think I need a nap.
Needs a nap. So they go back up to the room, and he's not feeling good because we forgot to mention that when they meet the staff, he actually has a little drink.
Because of the head butler is holding like a silver tray in front of him, and there looks like a little tiny cup and like a container behind it of like tea or some kind of coffee or something. So Don Knotts says, well, I guess I'll help myself. And he just pulls a little cup and he takes a little sip and he's talking to people, takes a little sip, talking to other people. And he's like, that doesn't taste right. What is that? And he said something to the effect of buzzard feces.
It was, I think she said it was ink made from buzzard pus.
Yeah.
So they go back in the room and he's not feeling well, so Dr. Tart's trying to tell him like, look, man, you could do all this. If you throw up, basically, it's from the buzzard pus, you make yourself throw up, you feel better. You could rip the wings off a fly, put them on the back of your throat, make him, and Dr. Tate, Tim Conway's being very dramatic about it. And so they kind of have a discussion and so from there, this is when I believe they find another passageway, correct?
Well, Tib Conway opens up the armoire to get his jacket to read off the notes that he's been taking, and his jacket's not in there. And then he closes it and turns to him and says, my jacket ain't in there. He said, what do you mean it in there? He said, well, it ain't in there. Well, where'd you leave it? I left it in there. Well, then of course it's in there. I just looked at it, ain't it there? Well, look in there again. And he opens up, and of course the shadow put it back in the right spot. So then he pulls it out, and there's another note. And I do believe they did find a passageway at that period of time.
Well, actually this is actually when they're going to go to the actual crypt and see if that's when they're like, all right, and Tim Conway's like, look, this is going to be a Wokalar. This could totally be a Wokalar. They come back from that. They've been known to come back from the dead. And he's just like, give me a break with this Wokalar stuff. And they're like, well, could be the ghost. And he's like, it's not a ghost. And so they're like, look, let's go to the crypt, open up the coffin. His body's there. Let's make sure his body's there. It's not a ghost, yada, yada, yada. So they go to the coffin, they go to the crypt, they go in the mausoleum or whatever, and they open up, they finally get it open. And like a, basically like a, like you would see at a Halloween shop. It kind of sits up and kind of screams at him. Yeah, it's like a dummy.
And as soon as it does, boom, they run like little girls, terrified, and just screaming, running, and they run into the house. And I believe this is where they try to get to the elevator.
And they're waiting, and then the gate kind of opens up, Don Knotts falls in there, and there's Hilda, our beautiful maid, dead.
Dead.
You know, and of course, Dr. Tate is like, wow, she's really got a thing for you, you know? Because she's leaning on top of of Winship, and he's like, she's dead. You know, so he doesn't notice that, and they read the note. And it was actually the only note that actually rhymed, and I have that one down because it stood out to me that this is the only one that actually did rhyme, and it was, Hilda is dead, and there's something to note. You can't bury her at sea. Because her bosoms will float.
Yeah, and I forgot about that one.
So that's the only note that actually, I wouldn't say makes sense, but it actually rhymes all the way through.
Right.
So, of course, you know, they gotta tell somebody, right? They can't.
Right, and this is where he finally tells Tate, "You stay here. I'm gonna go get somebody." And he literally stayed there, but as soon as Don Knotts walked away, the elevator slowly started to move. And, of course, Conway, being a goofball, didn't notice it.
Well, he didn't notice because he heard a scream after Don Knotts goes away.
Yes.
He hears a woman scream, so he runs to go find out what's going on, at which point we find out that Dr. Tate's actually afraid of his own shadow because he sees his shadow on the wall and kind of freaks out and then notices it's a shadow. Then he finds in the hallway there's, you know, Detective Winship with the nanny has fallen on top of him. And, you know, so they say, come on, there's a body up here. We're going to show you there's a body up here. They take her back. Don Knotts pushing her. You know, she's got a cane. She's a little stiff at it. And he's kind of pushing her there. And, of course, what do we expect? No body. The body's gone.
So everybody, they keep trying to say, come here, look, there's a dead body. To a bail. No dead body. So everyone is starting to think these two buffoons aren't only buffoons, but they're idiots, just flat out idiots.
So from that, we cut to Justin the butler. And now this was probably my favorite scene of the movie is you got Justin the butler, the guy accused of murdering his wife and 13 lovers, standing at a cuckoo clock. And he opens up the glass when no one's around, and he adjusts the cuckoo clock.
Very slowly, precisely.
Closes the glass, and then what do you know? Ticks out, cuckoo, cuckoo, and he grabs that bird, and he starts, my little feathered friend, and he's ripping this head off of this cuckoo clock. You know, so this guy's definitely, you know, he's definitely twisted, this guy.
Man, my fine feathered friend.
Oh, yeah. He, there was so much passion and anger in I got that cuckoo. And he was literally like ripping it with his thumbs into little pieces.
Yeah, so that was funny. I loved that scene. That was a great scene of just showing how demented this guy is, that he was just going to like make this bird come out of a cuckoo clock and kill it. So we cut to Dr. Tate and Detective Winship. They're back in the room now, and they're kind of discussing things. And this is when they find another secret passage within their room. So they grab their candles and they start going through these secret passages. And this comes up to they kind of like some light just shining through. What is this? And they see, and basically, it's a couple peepholes. So.
Yep.
Peepholes to them on the other side of the wall. It's a big portrait of, you know, a guy, I don't know, say like 1700s type of thing with a dog. This is the scene that I, as soon as I saw it, I go, oh yeah, I remember this as a kid.
Oh well, yeah.
This
yeah,
made
yeah.
a complete impression. On me.
Same here.
And I don't know, is that a good, if it was a good or a bad thing. So, well, it's like, well, it looks like a bedroom. And, you know, so that's what Dr. Tate says, because he's up there. And, you know, Detective Winship's like, all right, well, would you want someone looking in your bedroom? Let's, come on. Can't get, look at, well, I think it's Phyllis's bedroom. And so now, well, hey. So, you know, so Detective Winship is like, well, let me get up there, you know, because Dr. Tate says she's trying to get undressed.
Yep. Cue the.
The burlesque kind of like sexy music. Yeah, exactly. And so they're fighting over who's going to get up there and, you know, and
here's the thing. They're such idiots. There's two sets of eye holes, but they're fighting over the one set.
Right. And by the time Don Knotts or Tim Conway, Dr. Tate realizes that, it's a little too late. And so they're watching her, you know, she takes off. She's got her slip on. She's got her stockings on. She's taking her stockings off. It's not, you know, you'll see any nudity or anything like that, nothing, but you're definitely really getting that sexual feeling there. These guys are like, oh my God. And Tim and Don Knotts is describing what she's doing. And Tim Conway's character is offering him, I can't remember the amount, but it's like, you know, I'll give you a quarter or something. Cause he's like,
I'll give you a pence. I'll give you a pence. I'll give you 10 pence. I'll give you 100 pence.
Yeah.
And he just wouldn't get it out of the way.
And he would not get out of the way. And he's describing to Dr. Tate, you know, she took off her stocking. He's like, oh, that's the best part. And then she, you know, so by the time Tim Conway realizes, like, oh, there's another set of peepholes, which is the dog eyes on the other side of the portrait. And he's, you know, complaining there's a nose in his way because it's a portrait of a dog. Right. And then she leaves. And that's when, you know, Detective Winship is like, you know, my favorite quote is, you know, the way he says it, she's gone. You know, he just says it in this very, like, he's just so disappointed because she's gone.
She's gone.
Right. And then one of my favorite parts was as soon as they turn around and they start to walk away, Conway says, we might want to mark this spot. We might want to come back and do some further investigation.
Yeah, so he puts a white X on the barrel right there. And as soon as they walk away, who's there? The shadow. Who's followed them in from the beginning when they first walked in. So they're walking through there. And that's when they find basically a double-sided wall where the cuckoo clock was. It's a spinning wall. Push it, turns around, looks identical. And there's Justin the butler.
Dead,
sitting like in a chair, hung by the chains. If anyone's ever, you know, cuckoo clock's got like long chains with pine cone weights on it, and there he is, strangled. So this is the point where, like Dor said earlier, you know, Detective Winship is like, all right, look, Dr. Tate, you're staying here. Enough of this walking away and coming back. Fine, well, you're going to stay here. All right. So Winship goes to get Phyllis, and that's when the shadow comes out. They have a little interaction with Dr. Tate. When Winship comes back with Mistress Phyllis, well, Justin's not there.
Right.
But Dr. Tate is. Same type of situation. His bowler hat's kind of like tipped down so you can't see him. And, you know, and Detective Winship is just like, he's dead. My buddy, my pal. He's
all these years.
Yeah, from...
I like took him from a small town of Minnesota.
Yeah, he says some town of Minnesota, and then he says a couple more words, and, you know, you hear Dr.
St. Paul.
St. Paul. What? St. Paul, Minnesota. Can you say that part about my mom again? And he's just like, are you serious? We got work to do, and we thought you were dead.
Yeah.
You know, so once again, there's no body. So they walk out with Mistress Phyllis, and I believe they hear another scream, and they go to another room, which would be the nanny's room, they want to go talk to her, because this is where Phyllis is like, look, this is the nanny. She's trying to kill everybody off, kill me off, so she gets the inheritance.
Right.
It's got to be her. Let's go talk to her. They get there. Guess what? Nanny's dead. Nanny's dead, and there's a doll on the floor, and they pick up the doll. It's like an old-time big porcelain doll, and it just starts talking.
Right. Well, no, there was actually a key in the back that Don Knotts had to wind, and he literally wound it up like 5 times, and then turned it towards him, and then it started talking to him.
Right, and telling another
note.
Just like unquote. A note, it's another little story, but it's this voice coming through this doll, and it's a self-destruct doll. And it just starts to smoke, and they kind of drop it. And again, you know, they hear a thud on the door. They open the door. There's a big, like, throwing spear, and it's got a Keena note, and it's pretty much saying, like, look, the murderer is going to be, the shadow, quote, the murderer is going to be in Lord Morley's torture chamber.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't want
to come here.
Yeah. They don't want to take Mistress Phyllis down there. So they're like, you get a cup of tea. Well, while this is going on, of course, the body gets pulled away.
You see the feet go, like, behind the bed. It's like drugged behind the bed.
Right. So they cut to that scene. They take the key and they go down to the torture chamber, stick the key in there, and they go in this chamber and they walk around with their candles. And this is something I noticed whenever they're in the secret passage. They always got these little candles, but it's really bright. Like, you're like, there's no way these candles are throwing off this much light. And I know, okay, it's the movies, but I'm like, I'm watching it real close, and I took screenshots, and I'll put those screenshots on the blog. You can, at some points, I catch it just right where there's the candle, which is actually like a real candle head, but on the backside, it's a flashlight of some sorts, like a long safety type flashlight. And I just catch it a couple times and took snapshots in VLC.
Yeah, I'll say good eye. I wasn't looking for it. It is like the candle from the front looks 6 inches tall. In actuality, the candle's only 2 inches tall. The bottom of the candle is the flashlight facing back towards them. And I noticed in this scene, this was the scene where I noticed how it was super dark, and then he came around the corner with his little candle, and all of a sudden everything was super lit. I just thought it was literally somebody pointing a light at them and then turning it on when he came around the corner. But you caught the fact that it was actually a light in the body of that candle.
Yeah, and you'll notice that whenever they're in these secret passages, that you'll notice how bright it is. And I think I caught the screenshots earlier when they before they find Justin. So, anyways, I just wanted to point that out. I was all proud of myself for catching that. But they get into the torture chamber. They kind of get split up, and then they meet up in the main chamber. And as they walk in, Dr. Tate kind of doesn't notice that he walks on a bed of nails.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he has shoes on. He has shoes on, but you hear the sound effects of the ting, 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 and he's like, oh, jumping around.
Well, yeah, and I tell you, it looked almost like it was literally the nails were going through his shoes, it looked like. I couldn't tell because it was really dark. All I know is, in my head, I thought, oh, my, that could really hurt.
Right. So, and he played it off as it did. And as that's happening, I'm not sure if he bumps into Detective Winship, but he falls into a chair.
Into a chair.
That kind of looks like it was, a big wooden chair, maybe like, kind of reminded me of like an old-time electric chair. But he falls into it, and of course, he grabs the arms of the chair, and clamps go down. Hence, that starts the torture of that device, where the chair kind of gets lifted up to a platform on his back, and there's like 4, 5, 6 really flimsy looking
really
double-sided axes just
going really slow, yeah. chop
really
chop,
slow
chop,
and,
chop.
And flailing all over, like these are not going to cut, but the idea is that these are going to cut this guy in half.
Yeah.
You know, so Dr. Tate, of course, he's telling Dr. Tate to cut him out. He's asking Winship, you got scissors?
He isn't asking anything. He's screaming, get me out of here! Get me out of here!
Yeah, and so he has no scissors, so he decides he's going to try and gnaw it. He's going to gnaw the rope to get him off, and that's not working. Yeah. So he looks and sees an old time, just like Scooby-Doo, an old, like,
yes,
knight's uniform, holding a big, huge battle axe type thing, and he's trying to get, but of course the axe is inside the hand. It's like a display piece. And while he's fighting with this, the shadow comes out of the shadows
and puts a knife up above his head, going right towards Don Knotts. Don Knotts screams bloody murder
and chops the rope. And stops the chamber. And that's when, of course, Dr. Tate comes over and tries to, act like he's sawing the,
right, he has the whole knight. He dragged the whole knight over, and he's trying to use the axe at the top of the knight and to try to cut the rope. The rope's already cut, buffoon.
Yeah, so they see the shadow. They know the shadow exists. It's not something I was talking about. Like, there's actually the shadow.
Still could be a Wookalar in a hood.
It could be, yeah. So they think, okay, we're good. The shadow's gone, but it's not over. It's not over. It can't be over because the basket in the corner creeps out. Is a big, giant, like, python.
I don't know. All I know is it's a big snake.
Yeah, python ball.
Moving very, very slowly. But they were moving even slower.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's coming at them, and they're like, you know, they freak out. They end up going into a little, like, cubby area. Door shuts, you know, and they're kind of stuck. And there's a candle stick holder on the wall, and, of course, Tim Conway just accidentally, as they're looking for some way out, kind of hits it. Boom, they fall. Here comes the Star Wars
garbage compactor. Yeah, as soon as that happened, just like you, as soon as they fell into the garbage compactor and they showed the angle of it, this is Star Wars.
Yeah,
this is straight from Star Wars.
Although it wasn't shot as quite as well, but they discovered they're in a trash heap, and it's not just is it where the garbage is, but it's a compactor of some sorts, and the ceiling starts coming down. And then,
so what does Conway start to do? But he starts to eat stuff.
Of course, because if you eat everything, like what would probably be done in Scooby-Doo, you see Shaggy and Scooby trying to eat everything, and you hear it. It's not just eating. There's great sound effects of him trying to eat this lettuce that's down there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
He's an idiot.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And then cut to now all of a sudden these things come up from outside, and here comes this compressed like brick of garbage, and out pops Dr. Tate and Detective Winship. So they survived the compactor. There was no 3PO and R2-D2 to save them. They were just basically lucky.
Stupid luck.
Exactly. And so they are like, okay, we're going into this. We're going to go back to the Morley Mansion. We're going to tell them we know the shadow. And they get back into the Morley Mansion. And we come to find someone is actually like inside of some kind of secret compartment in the floor putting money into a bag.
Comes out. Yeah, I believe all you see is like a hand coming up with money, more money, more money, more money.
And you find out it's a sharp-dressed Mistress Phyllis Morley dressed to skip town. And they encounter her, and they're like, we are glad we saw you. And just typical bumbling idiots, you know, she's like, look, she's got a gun. She's pointing at him. They're like, you don't need that. We're here. We've seen the shadow. We know the shadow exists, and she basically confesses because she thinks they know it's her, and she confesses to the murder of Lady and Lord Morley, that she killed them, and she goes on to explain she killed them because she's got a gambling habit, and she needed more money, and they wouldn't give her any money, so she wants the inheritance.
Right. Yeah, and her logic was, all of these helpers have been killed, I'm next, I'm getting the money and leaving, get out of my way.
Exactly. You know, you're not going to stop me, but before I can leave, I need to take care of you guys.
Right.
You know, so she's backing up. She trips. She falls into this big, giant, like, flower, you know, I don't even say it's a flower pot. It's a big area with plants, garden type area. She falls in and, of course, out the arms of the shadow to grab her. She gets up, she's scrambling, the shadow's coming out, she's trying to shoot the shadow, and you can tell the shadow's like getting jarred by the bolts, but still coming at her, and that's when, you know, Dr. Tate's pistol with the 3-foot barrel comes in handy. Don Knotts' character basically lifts up Dr. Tate's leg, and they shoot, and it ends up shooting Mistress Morley in the hand, dropping her gun, the shadow basically comes upon her. She faints, of course. And as she faints, the shadow turns around, pulls off the mask. Not a Wookalar, but it's actually Lord Morley. Then we cut to when the police are there to take
the bodies
to take a Phyllis. And she gets taken away. Don Knotts, you know, throws a couple, you know, slang terms at her about being a gambler.
Right.
And
then we also see all of the help is there and alive.
Yeah. Big thing I just missed. As soon as he takes off the mask and they see it's Lord Morley, out comes the staff. Right. And then we'll go to the Bobby's there. They're going to take her away. And there's the staff lined up. And Lord Morley proceeds to tell them, like, he knew basically when he got back from getting his cigars, he saw that Lady Morley was dead, looked in the mirror, and he saw that it was Phyllis. She clubbed him and he passed out. And when he hit the lagoon and went underwater, he came to, escaped from the car, had the staff meet him at the mausoleum, and they concocted this big scheme, to basically force Phyllis to admit that she murdered. So the whole staff was in on this. Nobody gets murdered, of course. You know, Tim Conway and Don Knotts can't take a pulse reading or anything to know that nobody's dead.
Right.
Or stick around long enough to see what happens. So he tells them this story and, you know, thanks them for what they've done. And there's a gift. And Jacques, and I want to say maybe it's Justin, I don't remember, are putting this gift into the car. And it's a big sarcophagus.
Yeah.
And they're sliding into the car. And, you know, so they, Tim Conway, Don Knotts, they start driving away and they're talking. They're like,
well, yeah, but I will say that you missed one of my favorite lines, which was right before they got in the car, Tim Conway turns to him and says, oh, don't worry. If you die again, don't forget, just, give us a call and, we'll come help find your killer again.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Don Knotts' character is playing along. Like they knew what everything was happening. You know, they were, on to it. So they get the sarcophagus in there. They tell him it's just like this, 1,500-year-old, whatever, 15,000, right, whatever it is, old gift, basically. And, they drive away and they're talking. And Tim Conway's character, Dr. Tate, is saying, well, look, you know, now that we've, you know, solved this Morley case, maybe they'll put us on the Wookalar case. We can solve this Wookalar case. And, you know, so Detective Winship is just like, you know, you can tell he's like, look, man, I've been through all this crap. I'm not enough with the Wookalar. There's no such thing as a Wookalar. And Tim Conway's like telling him, like, no, there is, and telling about the story. And as he's telling the story and Tim, not just, you know, talking to him, you see Tim Conway looking in the rearview mirror and the sarcophagus, top starts climbing up and up sits this like,
half human, half pig
snout with big tusky kind of fangs coming out and sits up and is grunting and, cut.
And Tim Conway just is like frozen.
It cuts to the car kind of swerving and you can hear Don Knotts yelling, it's a Wookalar. And
you can grunt if you want to, but I believe in Wookalars.
I don't know how I put up with you. Believing in a crazy thing like that. A guy who looks like a pig.
And cut to credits. That's it. That is The Private Eyes. In a nutshell, I guess. A big nutshell.
Yeah, and I'll say, I didn't see it coming, but it only made sense there was some closure with the Wookalar. Because the whole time, as soon as they're talking, from the beginning of the movie, I'm thinking, what in the hell is a Wookalar? I've never heard of the word Wookalar before. What, a Wookalar? What? And he kept saying Wookalar. I'm like, what is a Wookalar? What is a Wookalar? Then, of course, come to find out, that's the finale, a Wookalar. A real live Wookalar.
Right. And that was, like I said, that was the one thing that stood out in my mind about this film. As a matter of fact, on my blog a few weeks ago, when I watched this again, I posted a picture of a Wookalar and kind of questioned, like, hey, can you guess what this is? And, you know, a few days later, I'm like, it's the Wookalar from Private Eyes. So, yeah, I mean, it's a fun movie. It's definitely a fun, entertaining movie. My question to you is, and we spoke about this the other day, the rating systems have definitely changed since we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
So, would, you know, you've got young boys. Would you watch this with your kids? Or would you let them watch it?
Oh, yeah. I'll say my oldest son is going to turn 8 in like 3 months, and my youngest son just turned 5. I'm a firm believer the ratings are just guides. They're not anything is hard set. I still do think that they've definitely changed the rating since then. This was rated PG. There was really nothing. I mean, Tom and Jerry cartoons back in the day were more violent and, you know, did more things in this movie. I would definitely let my kids watch it, partially because they see, in my humble opinion, two of the better classic actors.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I'm glad you said that, because I actually watched this with my 5-year-old. We watched it today. I wanted to rewatch it before the show. And really, you know, like you said, I mean, Tom and Jerry growing up, the Roadrunner, you saw more acts of violence. You know, this was more an after effect, like, okay, there's someone slunched over the knife in their back or whatever.
And there was no blood, no gore, no nothing like that. Every murder was essentially like a bump on the head and the guy falls over.
And the only part that I actually kind of monitored what he watched was when they were peeping in on Phyllis.
Oh, I'm sure my youngest would have thought that was hysterical, because there's a dog's eyes.
Right. So yeah. So we watched that, and I don't think it was bad at all. I mean, it was all good humor. Like you said, I think they see a lot worse in cartoons these days. So what are your overall thoughts? You think it holds up? I mean, I know you don't really remember it as a kid, but.
Well, it was definitely from a different era where timing was much different. Right now, in today's films and movies, everything has to be lightning fast. There has to be something every 45 seconds or the movie's too slow. This movie was much slower, much more methodical, and, to be honest, drove home the points that it needed to drive home and nothing else. I liked that about the movie. I will say, I liked this so much. I also found out Lang Elliott was involved in, he was a executive producer for a film a year earlier, 1979, called The Prize Fighter, with Tim Conway and Don Knotts in it. So I'm going to go on my own and I'm going to watch that one. And to be honest, I expect the exact same stuff. You know, two goofballs stupidly doing something right.
Yeah, exactly. And they also did the Apple Dumpling Gang. That was another Tim Conway and Don Knotts movie that they did together. So I think it held up for what it was. I know I said earlier in the show that sometimes I have, I guess, fonder memories of things from being a child, but I definitely didn't think this was like some blockbuster. It is exactly as I thought. Here's the funny thing, though. It was 1980. So I was born in 74. I could have sworn that I saw this in the actual theater. I still think I saw it in the theater, but I don't know. I think back then, I think they used to like release films and then they would re-release them maybe a couple of years later in films, in theaters possibly.
Well, I can tell you back then also, most of the time films stayed in theaters much longer, and they literally had theaters that were second run theaters and a lot of drive-ins. One or two of the movies they would play that night were for like 1+ year old.
Right. I mean, not because I think I was too young. I just didn't think I would remember it at 6. But, you know, I very well may have. And it may have been like the summer after. Maybe it was made in 80 and actually came out in 81 or something. But I'm pretty sure I saw this one actually in the theaters. But I liked it, man. It's definitely going to stay in my rotation
I gotta tell you the one thing about this that blew me away. Okay, you ready? After the fact, I go to IMDb, I'm looking at stuff, I look at people, I look at Mistress Phyllis and look at some of the stuff she was in. To my surprise, she was in Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you wouldn't bring this up because I feel like I'll lose any kind of credibility, but I believe that was from a deleted scene, I think.
I'm
not positive. I was going to watch today because I know Dora's going to bring that up on me.
Well, no. You're not losing any credibility. I will say, I don't really notice her because the scene they're showing her in is at a table with a couple people eating, and I do not remember that scene.
Yeah, I got to double check that, and I think it was a deleted scene. If not, well, you won't know because I'll edit that part out anyways.
Right. Well, one of the things I really liked about this experience now that I'm older is having a tool like IMDb and looking and making the links and the relations to all the other stuff going on with these people before this movie and after this movie to see how they changed, you know, what definitely changed. This to me looks like it was a part of a chain of movies with Don Knotts and Tim Conway, where it looks like they were trying to make these guys a pair. They were trying to make these guys, dare I say, young teen and family favorite kind of actor duo.
Right. Yeah, it was good. I completely enjoyed it. Definitely would recommend it as a funny. I mean, if you like Clue, the movie, which I would even say that's probably more violent than this movie, Clue.
Oh, much more violent. Are you kidding?
But still a great movie. Like Scooby-Doo, any kind of stuff like that. It's just good humor, mystery. Obviously, we've spoiled it for you if you haven't seen it, but it's from 1980. If you haven't seen it and you're listening to this podcast, probably doesn't make much sense that you didn't see it, but I'm sure you did. So go ahead and watch it. It's not on Netflix. I believe it may possibly be on Amazon streaming. You probably can find it on YouTube. You could probably find it in some other gray areas on the internet.
Right. Well, I mean, and here's the whole kicker. We are not only going to talk about Back to the Future. We wanted to basically put our stake in the sand on episode one, in proving we are going to talk about nearly anything. Okay. And we wanted to basically shoot for something that might ring a bell to people and might not ring a bell to people. Introduce this to people who've never heard it before. Because to be honest, this is the kind of movie you can put in front of anybody, young, old, or whatever, and they're going to find something in the movie that they do like, that they do consider funny, you know, and it's safe. You don't have to worry about foul language. You don't have to worry about blatant nudity. You don't have to worry about any of that. It's just, you know, a fun, clean movie.
I mean, we may get some that, you know, have some in the list that probably aren't going to be, but I mean, as a listener, you'll probably already know that, or we'll even say in the review, like, this definitely, we're not going to recommend. I mean, that'll be part of our, podcast, whether or not we personally, and I mean, you could take that for what it's worth, if we would watch it with our kids. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm going to say this right now. There's two, I guess you would say, series of movies that I'm probably not going to do on this. Star Trek and Star Wars. I'm probably going to leave those alone. Yeah. If anything, Star Wars down the road is like, hey, let's just do like a whole nutshell thing, but probably not. I mean, it's so big. Everyone's seen it.
Exactly.
It's all been covered before. I don't recall hearing Private Eyes on any podcast. And even if it is, I mean, we're going to do movies, like you said, we're going to do something like this, and then we're going to do something like The Goonies, and, you know, I have Night of the Comet in the works to do with my wife. You know, Dora's going to be with me on some shows. My wife's going to be with me on some shows, and there's a possibility all three of us will be on some shows. So, I mean, like I said, again, this is just basically an excuse to watch some old movies again, you know, have an excuse to watch them and talk about them.
Right. So now, if you're sitting here listening to this, now you have an excuse.
But, so that's our review of Private Eyes. And, if you want to contact us, we're going to, by the time this comes out, I should have everything set up. So, you can go to throwbackreviews.com. That should have the feeds for our podcast. I'll probably have some screen captures for each episode on there. Not every episode, but if, like this one, I'll definitely have some screenshots. If you want to contact us, if you want to tell us what you thought of the first show, what you, you know, and maybe some recommendations of what movies you'd like to hear, any suggestions, comments, you could email us at throwbackreviews@gmail.com. You could also, if you want to, you can leave a voicemail at 716-243-2709. You can call that anytime. Doesn't matter. It's not going to ring my house. So if you want to leave a voicemail, email, you can do that. Door, if anyone wants to get a hold of you, where can they find you at?
Oh, that's the best way. Just email, throwbackreviews@gmail.com. If you want to go to my website, just go to door2doorgeek.com.
Yeah, definitely check that out. I know a lot of you probably know Door from that, but I'm hoping we get some new listeners from other areas that may not, and they can get stuff from, because Door does a lot of podcasts. He does a lot of stuff, a lot of, you know, computer stuff, Linux, lots of stuff, lots of good stuff. We do a show together, Android App Addicts, over at podnuts.com. You can check that out. Like Door said, throwbackreviews@gmail.com. If you want to check anything out of mine, my Google Plus, my Twitter, you can go to sjdiner.com, check that out. And just want to say thanks, man. This was a good time. I had a real good time doing this. I'm glad we finally got a chance to sit down and knock this first one out, and hopefully we can keep them going.
Very cool, man. I definitely look forward to the next movie.
All right, that is episode one, and thanks for listening. Dr. Tart, Dr. Tart, Dr. Tart, Dr. Tart, Tart, Dr. Tart, not Tate.